You're listening to the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show with Zach and Josh, brought to you by Northtown Automotive. Whatever you're looking for, you'll find it at Northtown. Shop online at northtownauto.com.
Happy Thursday, everybody. Zach Jones, Josh Schmidt, hanging out with you here this morning. You're listening to the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show, brought to you by Northtown Automotive. You'll find it at Northtown. Shop online at northtownauto.com. Josh, it's a weird morning. It's a weird morning.
Why you say that?
You know, I was talking with Jeremy and Joe as they were leaving and we were coming in, and it's like, you know, the morning starts, Darlene watching practice from the sideline in a hoodie and shorts. Joe Yurden, friend of the show, friend of the station, described it as, if you could describe someone's posture as pissed, that would be accurate. So that's wonderful news to begin the day.
Super cool.
And then I get here this morning, and, you know, real quick, I'll sit in my car for like 5-10 minutes, you know, gather my belongings, and I'll check Twitter to see if I missed anything, you know, within the 10-20 minutes it took me to drive here. And I see Mel Kiper apparently wants, like, defenses shot into the sun. And I'm just like, I feel like we're reacting a little too aggressively. I feel like we're being a bit much.
You want to add something else on top of this?
No, but hit me with it.
Jaromir Jagr is going to retire at the end of the season from professional
52.
Hockey.
He's 52. I feel like he's 20 years too late.
Hey, whoa. 20 years?
You're 52. Why are you still playing hockey?
That put him at 32.
That
Jeff Skinner is 32. You want Jeff Skinner to retire?
All right, 15 then. 35 to 37-ish. In that range, should have retired.
Alex Ovechkin.
Also should probably retire.
No. Jaromir Jagr
also,
is
also
like,
real quick on that. He's a physical specimen that like drinks Coke out of a water bottle during games and like he's fine.
Well, yeah.
That's not normal.
Yeah, it is.
At a professional athlete level?
For the 80s and 90s
very
it was.
Not normal.
Hey, whatever.
But like I'm having this moment today and real quick.
There's a lot going on.
We will talk about Darlene because that one I am genuinely nervous about. But on the Mel Kiper thing, and that's sort of where I want to take today's show as well, is like, can we all relax? It's been 2 weeks. It's not even October yet. Like,
well, yeah.
Like, offenses will figure it out. Offensive coordinators also get paid just like defensive coordinators get paid. Mm-hmm. They'll figure it out. I also think a major problem with teams not being able to go deep is their offensive lines suck for the most part across the league. It's why offensive linemen, when they're good, typically don't hit free agency.
Joel.
Until, like, they're very old.
Right.
I mean, even Mitch Morris, you know, going from the Chiefs to the Bills was a little weird, but the Chiefs had kind of somewhat already replaced him and were sort of looking forward, and the Bills had to make him the highest paid center in football. Did anyone ever think Mitch Morris was the best center in football?
No, but he was good.
He was
good enough.
He was serviceable.
He was better than average. And that's, if you're a lineman and you're better than average, and I'm not saying all of them are, but if you're better than average, you're going to get a big contract. And sure, there's some that are different than others. Like Deion Dawkins is
We took
better.
A call last week on Deion Dawkins, someone not being like
right,
thinking he's constantly overrated.
He's
about correctly rated. There's just not many great offensive linemen in football.
Right.
There just isn't.
Because your job is to stop seven other guys built exactly like you from getting to your quarterback, and half the time...
Well, I think there's other reasons why offensive line play is down in the NFL.
Well, no, I'm just saying in general, like not even right now, just over the course of the NFL's history, linemen have always had issues with this because it's a hard job to do. That's one of the harder jobs, physically-wise.
It takes a lot of chemistry
with
all five guys.
I mean, we saw in the Bears game, the Bears' right guard, was just standing there looking around like, who do I block? And there's three open guys and all three of them get to Caleb Williams.
It takes incredible amount of chemistry. It takes you just being flat out a good player.
Yep.
But like college more than the NFL is like notorious for the trenches win national championships. Yeah. I mean, just flat Alabama dominated the 2010s into the 2020s purely off the fact of they had the best front seven on defense and they had the best front five on offense.
Yep.
It was year over year. That's what won them national championships. Mark Ingram gets the Heisman Trophy. You know, Tua Tagovailoa gets the Tank for Tua headlines. But that's what did it for him. Georgia's doing the same thing now. I mean, look at the Philadelphia Eagles. They have most of the defensive line.
They're literally
Georgia.
They are the Philadelphia Bulldogs.
And then, you know, look at the Bills. Cedric Van Pran Granger is a fifth round pick, but all of us here starting center for Georgia for 5 years and we're like, now wait a second.
Right.
That's interesting. And then you look at this year, Texas. Texas's big thing is their offensive line play. If four of their five starters have played for 3 years together. Calvin Banks Jr. is going to be probably the first tackle taken off the board. What are they now? The first ranked team since 2000, for the first time since 2008, they're ranked number one in the AP poll. And they're having Arch Manning go back there and effectively not miss a beat, even though he at times looked lost against UTSA. But because of that offensive line just holding up like it does, you're fine. They've also honored like their fourth, fifth running back, carving out like 10 yards a carry.
I have an interesting comparison here, and I don't know if it's fully there yet. Are offensive linemen like relief pitchers in baseball? You have
not sexy, but you need them.
Yeah, and 6 times out of 10, they're going to let you down, but the 4 times they pick you up, they really pick you up.
Well, remember, I mean, too, what's also the best thing about an offensive lineman? If you don't hear anything. If I hear nothing about an offensive lineman, he's likely having a great day. And that's why I've been a big proponent of, you know, like, they signed Deion Dawkins. He had his best year last year. He's continuing into this year. Mm-hmm. Spencer Brown got paid right before the season started. I thought that was great to do so. He's an ascending player.
Osiris Torrance is probably going to get the same thing in a few
years.
We'll
see. I mean, he's going through a little bit of a sophomore slump. But why
Spencer Brown.
Yeah, but even like drafting him in the first round. Mm-hmm. I mean, they ultimately don't. They draft him in the second round. But I was big on him potentially even being a first-round pick because of the ability he had at guard. If they could have three of their five offensive linemen locked up for the next 5 years, you didn't even have to worry about it.
Well, and even look
they were heading in the right direction.
Look at Connor McGovern, too. I mean, he mm-hmm. is proven to be pretty versatile in terms of playing all last year at left guard. Yep. And then over the summer, it's like, hey, remember when you used to play center? Can you do that again? Sure. And it's working.
Sure.
Like, it's working so far. I mean, sure, there were two issues, but in terms of fumbles from Allen, but one was not on the snap, and the other one was when he had his glove on because of his hand.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't really think you can really fault anything so far from Connor McGovern in terms of being a center and snapping the ball. Because that's, I mean, obviously the center has to block as well, but would you say 75% of the center's job is to snap the ball correctly to your quarterback?
No, I'd say 50. The other 50 is being quarterbacking of the offensive line.
Oh, that's
line.
True. They are kind of the leader of.
Yeah.
Okay. Fair.
I would put it 50-50.
That's fair because I didn't think of him as like the leader of the offensive line, but you're right. That's true.
They help call protections. Everything
yeah.
Like that.
That's
it's
right.
just.
Okay.
But for me, it's. I think we're going too far into the aggressive, like the league needs to step in, cover, or you know, two wide safeties is ruining the league. It's been around for a few years. And ultimately, offenses will adapt. The great quarterbacks will still play great. They're still going to have their moments. Also, I think another big issue, and this pains me to say, because as a preseason denier, this has pained me. But like, yeah, maybe your starter should play a little bit in the preseason, because oftentimes in these last few years, not just the Bills, but across the board, NFL offenses have seemed just shaky at best. But in, you know, 2-3 years before, you know, you did have guys like Allen and Mahomes lighting everybody up. 2020 is kind of the perfect example of that, you know, now 4 years ago, where nobody had preseason football, and it did somewhat help offensive numbers explode early on.
Mm-hmm.
I think we're being all a little aggressive. You know, talk to me at week 10. If offensive numbers, and specifically passing numbers, are still down, and like the leading passing yards guy is going to be like 3,500 yards, and the most touchdown passes we'll have this year is like 28. Then talk to me. Now we're starting to get towards like the 80s and the 70s. I get it. But right now I'm like, relax, calm down. Like, teams are still figuring themselves out. There's a lot of injuries going around as well. Ask literally any fantasy owner. You're likely stressing about one of your guys being down. I think there's a number of issues, but like to see like going on ESPN that like Mel Kiper's like, nah, too high safety should be banned. I'm like, all right. I get it's ESPN. I understand. But like, oh, let's chill.
Is this like the sports cliche of there's a superstar player coming onto a team, he earns his starting spot, and then he kind of slacks off for a little bit, and then all of a sudden this young new hotshot comes in, proves himself, and takes the starting role? That's what defensive coordinators are doing right now. They figured out how to finally stop these deep ball explosive plays for most of the time. Mm-hmm. And now offensive coordinators are sitting up like, oh man, we got to figure something out here. What's going on? We should just ban that. That's not fair.
And that's my thing.
Offensive coordinators are not saying that.
Mm-hmm.
Mel Kiper is the one that said that. But at the same time, if we're all thinking it, they have to be thinking it too, right? If we're thinking about how much this has changed, how much these defenses have impacted this, offensive coordinators are one, probably a little upset because they figured they had it made. They figured out what to do to combat against these good defenses and just get the ball over the top. But now they're just spending their time, okay, what's next? What can we do next to change the game and get ahead of these defenses again?
I think it's just, well, that's my thing, is like any of this talk is just, it's downplaying offensive coordinators and the importance they play, or even offensive head coaches, the importance they play in scheming up to where we got to the point where, yeah, defenses were getting carved up. Did rule changes help? Of course. But that's what made it so fun. Offenses have changed all the time, though. I mean, this is the natural progression of the sport.
I mean,
I don't think it's ever going to get to the point where running backs are yearly running for like close to 2,000 yards, and all of a sudden we're talking again about, you know, is a 2,000 yard rusher going to break the record and they're winning MVP? I just don't see that ever happening.
But we always see the change between running backs and wide receivers. Right, we always see that fluctuation up and down.
But I don't even think it's ever going to get there. I think it's going to change within this year.
What the what do you mean? The scheme thing?
I think passing numbers will start to go up as the year goes on.
Well,
Wide receivers are too talented across the league. Quarterback play is too good. And offensive coordinators have never been smarter. I think defenses have like kind of gotten to the forefront. And if you've got talent, if you've got the right mind, Sean McDermott with the Bills, sure, you're good. But right now we're just seeing this kind of like, oh, okay, all right, we've got to like change this up. I do think, though, a big part of this is not the two-high safety look. I think it is poor offensive line play, or at least the depth of offensive line play, is not really there for a lot of teams. You're already seeing the Eagles, without Jason Kelce, look a little bit different and can't do things as much as they'd like to, and that's one guy.
I think you can also put this, if you want to look more in the forefront of things, in what will be in the spotlight, because, yes, I think your offensive line point is correct, but I think what people are going to focus more on, aside from the coordinators, is quarterbacks and how they play the game. You're going to see a lot more people try to get their quarterback to play like Josh Allen, to play like Patrick Mahomes. And obviously they were already trying to do that because those two are the two best quarterbacks in the NFL. But when you look at who you have around the league that's available to be able to combat these offenses and take care of this too high safety issue, you have Josh Allen, Patrick Mahomes, and who else? Right?
Yeah.
Like you don't have those guys that can throw that ball and uncork it deep downfield and make something happen.
At a consistent rate.
Because like Anthony Richardson can throw the ball down the field, but he can't do it accurately. He can't do it consistently. And you look at I look at a guy like Baker Mayfield too. He has Mike Evans, one of the most consistent wide receivers in the NFL, in NFL history. But Baker Mayfield has never been really thought of as this, I'm going to uncork it and throw it over the top and throw a 90-yard touchdown. Right? Like, it's not going to be, that's not his style. But at the same time, are quarterbacks like him who have that ability or potentially have that ability going to try to adapt to that, right? Or are coaches going to want them to adapt to that because of this change? Like, is that the solution that these offensive coordinators are going to try to think up? Are they going to try to get their quarterbacks to change themselves?
I think for me, it's going to be, this is also not going to be like the one look. I mean, it's already not the one look defensive coordinators are giving you, but like when you start to have like teams regularly, I mean, it's not like points are down, it's passing numbers are down.
Yeah.
And passing touchdown numbers are down.
Passing yards too.
Because, yards, touchdowns, all that.
If you look at it, you could just do what the Bills have done the first 2 weeks here and pass the short ball and go down the field.
That's what the Chiefs did last year.
Right.
I mean, so like ultimately, and the Chiefs' biggest problem is their wide receivers were actively a hindrance to their team. It was not like they were just bad. They were actively hurting the team. And so that's ultimately my thing, is just defenses will then have to adjust accordingly to essentially everyone running a sort of West Coast spread offense of bubble screens and quick outs and stuff like that and RPOs. They're going to have to adjust and bring the safeties in, which then will lead to these teams going, the two safeties are in, go deep. It's a chess match. Stop watching movies to think football is dumb. Yeah, it is a chess match.
You lull the defense into a sense of security of this is what they're going to do, and then boom, there it goes over the top.
We are through 2 weeks. And it is a topic to discuss. I don't disagree because, I mean, you've brought up the list too of like how starkly passing touchdown numbers over like the first week, 2 weeks have dropped over the last 3 years. But it's not going to stay the same. It is going to change. The league is favoring quarterbacks. They always will. Even when running the ball was the way to go, quarterbacks were still the stars. The Jets have not forgotten Joe Namath. He played in the 60s. So, I mean, like, that's my thing, is like the days of
the undefeated Dolphins where Bob Greasy threw like a total of 7 passes in a game. That's not coming back. We're not going back to the days of the 2000 Ravens with Jamal Lewis running the ball and it's all defense and Trent Dirfler just don't throw picks. They're not going to go back to that. But they are going to have to kind of play around with this. I don't want defenses to stop playing the game because I like watching quarterbacks throw touchdowns. I watch college football for that. You know, as ridiculous as that sounds, the saying has stayed the same. College, you win games by scoring touchdowns. Who cares about how many first downs you have? Score big touchdowns. It's big plays. In the NFL, it is putting together first downs. It is sustaining drives. It is going for it when appropriate. It is going for it when you've got the advantages.
It's possession.
It's possessions.
Yeah.
That's why, like, while yes, turnovers are huge, that is where having the game-changing quarterbacks like Mahomes and Allen does kind of change the game. Because before, and that's why I think a lot of coaches still harp on this, the turnovers are disasters. But when you do have the game-breaking quarterbacks like Mahomes and Allen, one or two picks in a game doesn't kill you because every possession those two have feels too much.
Do you think that this could send ripples down to college football?
Absolutely not. College is not talented enough.
Well, in the way that coaches try to coach their quarterbacks, or that quarterbacks and other players in the offense want to play. Because if you're looking, if I'm a college quarterback right now in my sophomore, junior year, and I'm saying, all right, I want to make it to the NFL, right? And I've played like this for so long, but hey, that might not work at the NFL level. Should I change my style of play? And same with
this.
Like wide receivers, or even if you're like an offensive coordinator in college.
But I mean, we already went through this with pro style based off college style, how guys couldn't take it from under center, or they didn't even know how to call plays because they were all just kind of given to them from the sideline. Yeah. That's probably never going to change. It's more or less just when they get into the NFL, you simplify it and then sort of give them more as they go. It's why you will see at times a talented rookie year and then a sophomore slump. They're giving them maybe too much or more than they could handle, what have you. College, it won't change just purely off the fact of teams aren't deep enough and talented enough. I think especially now in the NIL era, you're seeing just, you know, as an example, the SEC, Ole Miss. Ole Miss in the old BCS era, even the 4-team college playoff era, couldn't compete with Alabama, with Georgia, with Auburn, when Texas had a good coach with Texas, Oklahoma, USC, what have you. Now all of a sudden they can because teams are not able to just hoard talent like Smaug in The Hobbit and just treasure. They couldn't just do that. I mean, Alabama had effectively walk-ons as 4-stars. You know, and it only goes up to 5-stars. Now, all of a sudden, the talent pool is being distributed much more. Guys that aren't starting by, like, year 2 are transferring to go to Ole Miss or Mississippi State or what have you. The talent pool is not deep enough. We're in the NFL. We're seeing practice squad players. We're seeing it on the Bills. Practice squad players can come in and make a legitimate impact on the game. That is not always true in college. Oftentimes, if you get like that guy that's like the 3rd, 4th, 5th guy on the roster, it's a disaster. There's a clear difference. I think it's a big reason, and again, just kind of bring the point back home to the offensive line, that I think is the big reason why passing numbers are down right now, is offensive line play is not that great. Offensive line play top to bottom is not that awesome. You have the stars. Don't get me wrong. You have great players. It's not deep enough. You know, here, perfect example. Cleveland loses 2 of their offensive linemen in week 1. They couldn't do anything. Dallas, who the next week gets annihilated by New Orleans. I mean, annihilated. It was never a game. But the week prior against Cleveland, they're able to just pin their ears back and just ruin the game. And I think that's the thing. Offensive line, it never is given the credit it really is due. It is one of the most – the trenches in general, defensive line counts as well – is one of the most important position groups in the sport. If you have a bad either, you are limited in what you can do. That's why I always understood why Bean was trying to build the defensive line. My issue was I never thought he went for high potential guys. I thought he went for high floor guys that would just be good rotational pieces. I always thought that their plan was sort of to build the 2017 Philadelphia Eagles defensive line, which was a rotation, but they did have elite guys like a Fletcher Cox who could – you kept him in the entire game, and he was a game wrecker. That's where I think they want to go get Von Miller. Ultimately, I think the plan works if Von never tears his ACL because you're seeing it now, a year removed from that torn ACL recovery.
He's got sacks in back-to-back games.
And his pressure rate has been off the charts. He's been everywhere on the field. and you're seeing it as well. Rousseau, 3 sacks in game one, and he's kind of also been around the field. Ed Oliver, same thing. I think we're having a very different conversation about Von Miller as a Bill if he never tears his ACL. Number one, I think his first year he's got well over double-digit sacks. He was at 8 before he gets hurt, and we still had half the season to go. And you're likely also looking at a Rousseau not having a down year last year where he only had 5. It's a very different situation that they've got there. But I just don't think it's as aggressive of a discussion as it is. I think it's putting the cart before the horse. Again, if we're by week 10, 11, 12, and again, like we're sitting here going, man, the leading passing yards guy is on pace for 3,800 yards, maybe, and the most passing touchdowns in the league this year is going to be 30. Sure, then we'll look at it and go, all right, has this too high safety look like just completely destroyed what offenses are able to do? And then yes, I do believe the league will absolutely act. Offenses is what sells. College football is built off the big play. It's what's kept it popular, even with all the conference realignments and rivalries and traditions kind of being thrown to the wayside. You know big plays are coming. I mean, Arch Manning against UTSA has like 3 top 10 plays because it's just like they're all like 75 yards, what have you. Oregon for years was forgotten in the Pac-12. They weren't built to win a national championship, but they were exciting. They were really cool to watch. And, what's one of the most hated national championships of recent memory? It's the rematch between Alabama and LSU a number of years ago where it ended like 10-3. It was awful. No one liked it. It was awful.
I think also, too, what this is going to lead to on the defensive side is how teams that don't have the better safeties or the good defensive mind, like how the Bills have Sean McDermott, like, if you look at the Bills' safety room, not to say that the safeties aren't bad, right? But I think McDermott's defensive game plan certainly elevates them more than other coaches would. But if you're a team that doesn't have a good defensive mind and doesn't have the best safety room, I'm kind of interested to see how these teams adapt to this and try to create their own version of it or just improve themselves to come to this style of play, right? Because not every team is focused solely on this. And not every team, even the ones that are heavily using this too high safety look, they're not using it the whole game. They're just using it in the right moment. And I think that's the other part too, is this whole discussion of banning this, it's not like this is running the entire game. You can't do that. It just doesn't work. Like you were saying earlier, if you just have a team that runs a bunch of RPOs and bubble screens, eventually, those teams are going to have to pull those safeties in and change it up.
Well, and also what you're doing, what the defense wants you to do.
Right.
And which is not what you want to do.
Exactly.
You want to confuse them. And I think that's why I'm like, it's so early. Let's calm down. Because teams are doing – the Bills aren't even running the ball all that well.
Right.
That's the crazy thing. Like, people are excited about James Cook. He won Offensive Player of the Week. Cool. Like, he had 3 touchdowns. Didn't really play that much. I think he played half of, like, their 44 snaps on offense.
Right.
But the Bills themselves are not actually even running the ball all that well. The first half against Arizona, they did.
Yeah, and then the second half was
not good.
Yeah.
And so, like, that's the thing. It's like, even running the ball is not necessarily a good solution. It is just it's a kind of solution now. And you're going to have to see teams react to it and change. I'm excited for that. I don't see it as a problem. I see it as something to keep an eye on with the league as it goes. And let's not act like big passing numbers are just going to completely disappear or are not being seen at all. You already mentioned the Anthony Richardson 60-yard bomb to Al Pierce. Sam Darnold, I just saw it on the replays here on the TV, had a 99-yard touchdown to Justin Jefferson.
Yeah.
And he was double covered, but he threw it in a perfect spot.
And you know what else?
And Jefferson was there.
When you look at the All-22 on that, he had another wide receiver wide open that he could have thrown to if he didn't want to throw it to Justin Jefferson. That receiver came in and blocked for Jefferson so he could get to the end zone.
So I think for me is like, maybe let's take a timeout. Let's relax. Again, let's wait a few more weeks and actually put trust into the part of the field, part of the game that we enjoy so much and actually give faith to them that they'll figure it out.
And going back to Anthony Richardson, let's not forget who his head coach is, Shane Steichen. Also, look at all of the other offensive minds that almost got head coaching jobs last year in the offseason. The one in Bobby Slowick, right?
Houston.
Who's the one in Detroit?
Ben Johnson.
Those two. Those two are going to become head coaches at some point, and I think we're going to look at them as potentially the next Andy Reid in terms of coming up with a new revolutionary offensive play style that's going to kind of combat this a little bit,
or,
and it's going to confuse teams.
Or the new guy. Clint Kubiak with the Saints,
right? Yeah.
Where they have literally lit the league on fire,
and they're
by changing it up.
I hope they do it again this week because I just
by attacking the middle of the field using spacing. I mean, like they've been a lot of fun to watch. I mean, any Alvin Kamara fantasy owners like keep it going, baby. But I mean, Chris Olave, please, touchdown,
right?
But it's not like it's all been doom and gloom, and we're in an era where like everyone looks like the 1984 Bears or 85 Bears and the 2000 Ravens.
It just looks that way because of the fact, like, if Allen and Mahomes weren't like, not that Allen and Mahomes have had bad weeks, but mm-hmm. if they would have had more characteristic first 2 weeks, this would be a completely different conversation because everyone that's looking at this and freaking out and going, oh, we have to ban this. You're looking at it as, well, even the superstars can't combat it. Well, look at what Derek Carr is doing. Derek Carr with
looks like the MVP frontrunner.
Yeah, he is going insane in New Orleans when everybody thought he was washed up and done for 2 years ago. And now
last year too.
and even again with Anthony Richardson, a little more accuracy on this kid, and he's got some of the craziest touchdowns of the season so far. I mean, he already has one of them with Alec Pierce.
A little bit more. I need a lot more.
Well, okay, right, fair. But my point is the only reason people are freaking out is because the big teams, the Chiefs, the Bills, the Bengals, the Ravens, the 49ers. I mean, not really the 49ers. That's never been their real style of play, throwing it over the top. Yep. But the teams that you know can throw the ball down the field and will throw the ball down the field are the ones that are not doing it. So that's why everyone's freaking out. Everyone's, you know, it's the end of the world because those four teams can't do it. Well, they'll figure it out. Mm-hmm. It's just going to take a little time. Yeah. And some of them don't have the personnel. The Bills might not have the personnel to do that anymore. It might be just a little bit of a different play style from them, a different type of offense. Yeah. That's what we've talked about all offseason.
Yep. 803-0550 is the number to call. I mean, what are your takes on the defensive numbers, the passing numbers? I'm somebody, let's be patient, let's see. And also, I enjoy the chess match of the game of football. I don't want it to just be all offense all the time. Again, 803-0550 is the number to call if you want to join the show. We've also got Sal Capaccio coming up at 11 o'clock to give his thoughts on this as well. I'm definitely going to ask him, but also a check-in on the Bills as well. They had practice yesterday, although the first official injury report of the week is expected to come out today with them playing on Monday night. Zach Jones and Josh Schmidt here on the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show. This is WGR.
I think the league is growing, it's changing, evolving, if you will, as well. And rosters are built in some ways maybe a little bit different than they used to be built. And schematics have changed a little bit as well. So I think with that, you're seeing the game change then as well.
There's Buffalo Bills head coach Sean McDermott talking about the change in the league. I mean, as a defensive guy, he's probably got to be like, nah, I'm all right with it.
I'm the star
of the show. Let's go. You know, I mean, I feel like that's the thing. In the modern era, defensive coordinators, defensive head coaches, they get a bad rap. You know, everybody wants the offensive guy to be their head coach. They don't want to go through offensive coordinators, but have you? I still don't. Don't get me wrong. My opinion has not changed on that. But, you know, McDermott's probably got to be sitting there, maybe in the back corner of his mind going, yeah, baby, I'm the bride now. No longer the bridesmaid. 803-0550 is the number to call. We're talking defensive schemes today, and are we jumping the gun a little bit on freaking out about the passing numbers through 2 weeks? And we're going to get connected to our fans. Brought to you by Northtown Kia. Shop online at northtownkia.com. We'll start today with David. David, you're on the line. How are we doing this morning?
Doing great, guys. Hey, three points I want to make. First one is I enjoy listening to your show when I get the opportunity. You guys do a great job.
Thank you.
First thing is I'm patient. Okay, and I really think wait a little bit. We're going to see a little more of the passing game come out. That Darnold pass attempt was lucky. Probably two stinky safeties back there. So
that's probably one thing. Helped.
Right. And I wanted to call him last week, but I didn't get the opportunity. You guys were talking about Brady and his planning and stuff like that. And the point when you guys were talking popped into my head. The game last year, where after we learned he had a totally different game plan, but the run game was working, he goes, I'm sticking with it. And normally you don't see that. We didn't see that with our previous offensive coordinator. He just tried going with the game plan that he had in mind. Brady does have a game plan for each, and some of these games I'm sure are going to be high-passing games. We'll see, but I think that's the way he operates. So I'm going to hang up and listen to you guys.
Yeah, David, thanks for the call. And yeah, that was the Dallas game last year.
That was, as soon as he said that, I was like, that's Dallas.
I mean, that's, and that's the thing, is like, that's going to kind of a game that for Dallas will live in infamy because it was kind of a right. sign of things to come. And for Bills fans, it's kind of a weird thing because, yeah, like they won by just basically, and yeah, Brady was pretty open about it the next day in sort of his post-game presser,
right.
where he was just like, yeah, like we were willing to change it up. We were planning on it. It just never came. I would also say, and this is why, and I like that Dave's point too, he's patient. Week one, they went up against one of the worst run defenses in football. And in the first half, the running game really worked. They did go to the passing game much more in the second half, and that also worked. And they were able to not claw out a victory. Again, I look at that game very weird. The scoreline looked closer than it felt like it was, especially in the second half.
Mm-hmm.
They ultimately did have a chance to win it, don't get me wrong. But by the first drive of the third quarter, Buffalo scores. It's a tie game. That's right. why I was bringing up for the Miami week. It's not – the comebacks are not the same. You know, Arizona let that game slip very quickly. And Buffalo was able to kind of press on them. It's ultimately a special teams touchdown that even keeps them alive in that game at all. I will say, though, I think passing games will go up, namely because, as I've mentioned, I don't think the Bills have been running the ball particularly well. I think James Cook has been solid, fine. We also haven't seen them being pushed to the brink of like, hey, you need to throw the ball. You're in a shootout here. You know, again, Arizona, one of the worst run defenses in football, and they leaned out of that in the first half. It worked. Their biggest problem was they didn't have the ball. The defense was still adjusting to Kyler Murray, I don't know, being able to run. I know, surprise. And then in game two, pick six, a lot of short drives. I mean, again, like offensive snaps.
Three picks?
Yeah, ultimately offensive snaps. I think they had under 50.
Yeah.
So you really didn't even get to see that team either.
Well, I think also, too, something, you know, there that he brought up was just the ability to change on the fly. And I think that's something we're going to really see out of Joe Brady as a coordinator as it goes on here, because that Dallas game was what, like his third game as
something like that. Yeah, it was relatively early.
So I think as he progresses as an offensive coordinator, I think a characteristic we'll use to describe him is adaptable.
Yeah.
You can take his offense and adapt it to any situation that you're in. If you're going to a game and your game plan is not working the way you want it to, okay, it's time to shift. It's time to move. And teams do that all the time. But it just feels like he might have that might be like his bread and butter, is being able to change on the fly.
Because I think it is fair to bring up that not every offensive coordinator can. I would right. say Ken Dorsey couldn't.
No.
Their plan was, we are going to stretch the field passing the ball, even if we don't have the personnel, even if we're not getting appropriate blocking.
Even if it's not working. Even if we are going to
keep
30 passes and only 10 of them have been caught, we're going to just keep throwing it down the field.
Mm-hmm.
And it's one thing to say you're going to keep throwing the ball. It's another thing to say you're going to keep throwing the ball to Diggs on a streak route, or, you know, Gabe Davis on a deep cross. Like,
and that's it.
That's it. No, mix in a slant, mix in just like a little dump off to the side. If you want to throw the ball a lot, you have to mix it up. And I think that's something that Dorsey never understood. Then we're going to see now. It doesn't seem that way. It seems the same thing in Cleveland,
well, that's
too.
The thing. He's not even calling plays in Cleveland.
Well, right. But still, he's part of that.
Yeah, yes.
Mind the group that comes up with everything, and it's
the group think.
Yeah, sure.
Let's go to Jim here. Jim, you're on the line. How are we doing this morning?
Hi, guys. I do think it's part of it is the two high safeties, but I think mainly it's the lack of starters playing in the preseason. You're seeing it with the penalties, 20 penalties in that Eagles-Falcons game.
Mm-hmm.
Most of them, I'd say at least half to 60%, are pre-snap. These guys aren't playing at all in the preseason. The penalties are killing drives. You got a ton of new coordinators, and you've got half the league where the quarterbacks have three or less years experience. That's all contributing to this. I don't think it's completely too high, but I think that is definitely a shift that's gone on. But that's just my take on it.
Yeah, Jim, thanks for the call. That was something I rushed by because I wanted to bring up the offensive line point. But again, I will say this, and it hurts me to my core to bring it up and to agree with it.
Playing players in the preseason?
Playing starters in the preseason.
Zach! Wait a minute. This is revolutionary. You're figuring it out.
I think it is. I think it is warranted. My thing has always been the absolute. I mean, I don't deny it. I'm paralyzed by the fear of my starter getting hurt in a meaningless scrimmage.
Look at what's going on with the Sabres right now with Rasmus Dahlin. He just got hurt 5 minutes into practice.
And that's always the argument that's like, brought up is guys can get hurt taking a shower. You know,
right? Right.
Kevin Cobb at Bills camp was running out for training camp, slipped and ruined and ended a season. I get it, but. It's the meaningless game aspect of it to me that right. I'm just like, what are we doing here? I've never been a proponent of the preseason or anything like that. But I do think there is some credibility to the fact of, you know, would we get a drive with Josh Allen? He was supposed to play game two.
We got in the first game, it was he's going to play the first quarter. And then in the middle of a drive, they took him out. And that's you never see that.
Because he was going to play the first quarter.
Yeah, but you kind of...
I kind of respect that from McDermott.
I still remember. I think... I can't remember who said it. It was one of the commentators. I don't know if it was Chris or if it was whoever was on TV. But they were like, yeah, he just came out mid-drive. I understand he was only going to play a quarter, but this is a little weird. Like,
I respected McDermott so much for that. Like, no, I said you were playing 15 minutes.
I think it's a good point. Because if you're going to have so many changes, especially if this continues to get traction, if there's so many changes in the offseason and things like that, you're going to need your players to start more in these meaningless games because you're going to have to get them up to speed faster for the games that actually matter. And I think that plays into the offensive line play. I think by week five, maybe we'll see some of that disappear with teams that do have the better offensive lines. Because even the teams that have the good offensive lines are having problems right now. Like the Eagles, even though they lost Jason Kelce, the Eagles still have a good offensive line. Yes. But they're having their own issues right now, and I think part of that's on the coaching staff. Nick Sirianni
is a fraud.
Is a major fraud. But, yeah, I mean, it's still – time's going to have to tell on this. But if it's – like you said, if it's week 10 and we're still having this conversation, then it's – there's going to be something else going on here.
Yeah, I agree with that. But I have kind of – I have very much – and I don't like it. Believe me, it is going to be something that I'm probably going to seek a therapist about. But I do not like the fact that I am now on board with – okay, maybe the starters need to play like a lot in the preseason. Maybe But another example: Bryce Young.
Yeah,
he plays a game in the preseason, he played a few drives in the preseason. Mm-hmm. Game three against the Bills' backups to fringe roster players, and what did his first 2 weeks look like? He got benched.
Yeah.
Two starts into his second year. He's the former number one overall pick. Whether you agree with that or not, I mean, I wouldn't have taken him number one overall. I understand the first round pick thing, but I would not have taken him number one overall. Already done.
Yeah.
I mean, Dave Canales even said it. Like, I looked at the tape and we need to win games.
Right.
And yeah.
And that's a coach making a coaching decision.
And if you look at the tape. Bryce Young would have only stayed in for development reasons. The tape would tell you he should not be their starter.
Yeah. I mean, there's literally a replay where he jumped to throw the ball on a dump off and it hit the back of his center's head.
Oh boy, that's not good.
Like the camera literally like pans with the throw and then like snaps back because it hits the back of the center's head.
Mm-hmm. Pete Prisco of CBS, I'm just seeing this now, he tweeted this a little bit ago saying, offensive line play around the league is awful. They need to hit in camp, period. That's why scoring is down. That's why quarterback numbers are pedestrian. How can you become a good line when you can't hit? I think that's probably also something, too. That
brings up the whole meaningless games.
Yeah.
Playing in meaningless games, you're then playing – would not that practice is ever meaningless, but –
but I mean, I've brought up the poor offensive line play, and Prisco's bringing it up there. He probably has a very good point of you need to be able to hit in camp.
Is this where are we headed towards something where they could have a simulated like a simulator for offensive linemen? Like think about it, like you have a golf simulator, right? Mm-hmm. Where you play a round of golf just hitting at a screen. I'm not saying a lineman would just hit the screen, but something like that where you could have a lineman hit something and it would give you feedback rather than just hitting the dummies on the
you're gonna need live reps. I think that's kind of the key to it.
I don't know. I'm just trying to think of a way where you could eliminate two people coming together at such force, and have that sort of, you know, still give that feedback of like, well, this, you know, you got to hit harder here or do something different here with your weight or whatever. But I don't know. That's tough. But yeah. I don't know. I wonder if that's some. something that we see down the road, especially to avoid injuries, especially with the Tua concussion conversation.
Daniel Jeremiah tweets this out 2 minutes ago. I heard Jeremy and Joe bringing this up too. Mm-hmm. If we're throwing out rule recommendations, let's go to the college hash marks, more space, more fun.
Yeah.
I think that's, yeah, that's probably also something that should be brought up. More space.
What's the difference again?
I got to look that up in the break, but that's probably something to bring up as well. Of if you have more space, it's the same in hockey. And it's the same in soccer. When you have more space, look at goes up.
The European hockey game compared to the American hockey game is so much different. I mean, you hear it all the time. These guys have to come over here and adjust to smaller ice.
Yeah.
It's different.
They don't have as much space to work.
Right. But that's also what makes it the professional level compared to semi-professional or college or
but remember, like I mean, it's going to be one of those things where, but if scoring stays down, I actually really – that's the one – I could really see the NFL pushing if scoring were to stay down and ultimately they're seeing offenses really struggle.
I didn't realize it was this big of a difference.
Aren't the numbers farther too in college compared to the NFL? Like the 50 number, like, you know what I mean?
No, I mean, it's still 10 yards in between each. Yeah,
I'm saying the field is wider. I'm saying from the sidelines to the numbers.
Oh.
I'm not sure.
But the NFL...
I could be wrong, though.
In the NFL, the hash marks are 18 feet 6 inches wide. In college, they are 40 feet wide.
Oh, wow.
That's double of what it is in the NFL. I don't think... Maybe you shouldn't go that far.
But maybe tack on
like 10 extra feet.
Yeah, could be interesting.
Put it at 28, see how that goes.
803-0550 is the number to call if you want to jump in on this conversation. Sam, we're going to get to your call after a quick timeout. You're listening to the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show. This is WGR. Welcome back, everyone. Quick segment here. You're listening to the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show, brought to you by Northtown Automotive. Whatever you're looking for, you'll find it at Northtown. Shop online at northtownauto.com. We're going to go back to the phones here. We've got Sam on the line. Sam, good morning, my friend. How are we doing today?
Good, good. How are you guys doing?
Doing very well. Thanks for asking.
Doing good.
Yeah, two things. Hoping you could comment on, Mel Kiper. So I imagine he would want there to be only one guy back there. Or the two guys can only go as far as X or whatever.
Sorry to cut you off. Go ahead.
No, sorry. But what happens at the end of the half or the end of the game when there's the Hail Mary? I mean, they're going to change the rule at that point? Or, you know, I mean, what
are we going to
do? Treat
it like the onside kick where it's like, oh, you have to let everybody know you're going to do it and it can only be done at like the last like 10 seconds of the half or 10 seconds of the fourth. It'd be ridiculous.
Right, and then what would the penalty be? Like ineligible defender downfield, 5 yards. You know what I mean? I don't know.
Right? Yeah. It's more of a thing. And Sam, thanks for the call, man. It seems to be more of a thing of just like, I'm upset, so I'm going to throw this out there.
Yeah. Well, no. So
and,
Mel
and
Kiper's
and everyone's attacking Mel too. I think rightfully, but like it's sort of like the two high safety thing isn't even like the big issue. It's a lot of like teams can still go vertical. I've seen Benjamin Solak of ESPN now actually too.
Yeah.
Talking about this where it's like, it's not even necessarily like the vertical routes, the ones we all think of like just go run straight and we're going to throw it deep. Those are still available. It's the crossing routes, right, which the Bills did run to near perfection in 2020. They were known as like one of the most dangerous crossing teams in the league. Cole Beasley and Diggs just ate on those.
Right.
That's more the route that's being taken away, so you do have to go shorter. But the deep routes are still there. The problem is, and this has been my point constantly, is that the NFL is and will always be based off efficiency. It is sustaining drives. It is getting first downs. It is not stupid penalties that put you back 5, 10 yards on a first down. It is constantly getting positive yards. So the idea of running a 40-yard, you know, streaking route and that being like your go-to play doesn't make sense. It's why all of us get regularly frustrated when on second and one, just into enemy territory, you're not throwing the long ball. It's like, well, like it's only a yard. Like you can get that on third down. You're fine. Like, yeah. And even if you're, you know, across the 50, many teams argue you're in four down territory anyways. So like that's the thing. It's always about efficiency. So the idea then, okay, two of our more stretch the field plays regularly are gone. We're going to go to the shorter routes, but the vertical routes are still there. They are happening. It's just the other ones have been taken away, and teams are sort of trying to figure it out.
To answer his original question, Mel Kiper's argument was that you have the players start closer. It's not that you just eliminate one of them, it's that you have them come in closer rather than being so far
down
the field.
Yeah, they can run back if they want. It's just you can't start back there.
Right, you could just literally turn and sprint, which is kind of what the Bills secondary was doing against the Dolphins. I mean, I remember watching many plays where as soon as the ball was snapped, you have Cam Lewis just boop, dropping back, or Christian Benford, all right, see ya. Like, that's where he almost got his first interception, and that's how Jamarcus Ingram got one of his interceptions. Mm-hmm. Like, you just turn around and run.
And also, real quick, too, on the because we were talking about Daniel Jeremiah talking about moving the hash marks to the college base, which we found out was, like, big difference.
Yeah.
It sounds like no one wants that. Like, college coaches don't like how wide their hash marks are. So they want it closer, if not the medium. NFL rules.
Put them in the middle.
See, but I'm wondering, too, if, like, maybe college coaches are 100% right, and it actually should be closer. That the 18 feet 6 inches or whatever it is actually the way it should go, and not the 40 feet. And that's the thing, is like every tweet now I've seen from it is like either hell no or absolutely no. And reading that LSU article you brought up, it, you got guys like Ryan Day at Ohio State being like, oh, we hate this. We would actually like the NFL more. I think it's also one of those things, too, where it's like it's not helping our players prepare for the NFL game, or if it's more schematically. 803-0550 is the number to call if you want to join on this conversation. But coming up next, after a quick timeout, we'll hear from our own Sal Capaccio as the Bills are practicing today, getting ready to take on the Jacksonville Jaguars for Monday Night Football. We'll hear from him next. This is WGR.